Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And it's time for us to listen to another classic episode. It means it's a Friday, so let's all enjoy ourselves and dive back into the archives of Tech Stuff. You know, I've got more than 1,200 episodes at this point, so some of these are probably brand new to you guys. This episode originally aired on April 10th, 2013. It is called Tech Stuff Leaps into Hyperspace. Let's listen.
Red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. All right, here we go. Han Solo. I'm Captain of the Millennium Falcon. Chewie here tells me you're looking for passage to the Alderaan system.
Yes, indeed, if it's a fast ship.
Fast ship? You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon?
Should I have?
It's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. I've outrun Imperial starships, not the local bulk cruisers, mind you. I'm talking about the big Corellian ships now. She's fast enough for you, old man. What's the cargo?
Usually I'm the one calling you old man.
Yeah, that's true. I just wanted to turn that around a little bit. I also didn't go full Christopher Walken, despite the fact that I love that Saturday Night Live skit. So we are talking about the Kessel Run and hyperdrives in the Star Wars universe, and then kind of comparing it to what we would like to call real life.
Right. We're doing this, by the way, because this is our 501st episode, and we are big fans of the 501st Legion.
That's right. Here, That's so right. This is props going out to our Star Wars buddies. So you 501st members out there, this one's for you. So now, in the original context, we need to talk about what the Kessel Run is within the mythology of Star Wars.
Right. And it's not really mentioned in any of the three original films.
Right. Or even the fictional prequels that supposedly exist. No, we should also point out, According to everything I've ever read, Lucas considered anything that was in the movies canon.
Correct.
Anything outside the movies was just extra stuff that may or may not line up with what is canon. So there's no, you know, the stuff that we'll be talking about, a lot of this is things that other writers have kind of expounded upon.
In the novels or the comics, some of the video games.
Yeah, some of the cartoons, etc. And so the stuff that we're talking about, this is mostly people trying to explain away what Lucas created in a manner that makes kind of sense. Because a lot of the stuff that you watch in Star Wars, if you really think about it, you're like, wait a minute.
That's not science.
So the Kessel Run in particular is a route in Star Wars. At least this is the way it's explained in the expanded universe.
It's a smuggling run.
Right, which is exactly what, you know, Han Solo is a smuggler. And so this is a particular route through space that smugglers would take. And one of the big complaints or criticisms of this particular section of dialogue is that Han Solo talks about doing a Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs, which seems to suggest that he thinks parsecs is a measure of time.
Oh,
and,
right.
And it's not.
It's certainly not. You know, I think that my strongest explanation of this is just that Han Solo was just saying words. He was just talking and trying to sound impressive.
Yeah, my explanation is Lucas thought that parsecs sounded futuristic and that it sounds like a measurement of time. That was mine, which puts the onus on the writer, not the character. But hey, you know, I'm a writer. That's kind of how I think. Like, sometimes I make mistakes too.
I'm just saying that if you're going to excuse the character saying it, I think that is not a poor.
Right. If you want to be an apologist, sure. So what a parsec actually is, it is a unit of distance. It's technically based upon the sun and Earth, and a second of arc. It involves some pretty complex concepts that are not that complex, but they're difficult to explain in audio format. But ultimately, it translates to about 3.26 light years.
Right. And is specifically, by the way, tied to the distance of the sun from the Earth and
another object.
And another object.
Yeah, that
it's,
makes
it's
up
a,
1 second
it's a triangulation,
of
arc. Yeah. And yeah. So, you know, forgiving the fact that we're talking about a galaxy far, far away, and that perhaps, as Phil Plait of Bad Astronomer pointed out, that might not be the most valid measurement anything.
Why would people in another galaxy use a unit of measurement that's dependent upon the Earth's position relative to another object and the sun? That makes no sense at all. But anyway, so it's equivalent to about 3.26 light years. And of course, that just makes things even more confusing for people who don't know what a light year is, and they think light year is also a measurement of time. It's not. But at any rate, the description Han Solo makes is very confusing if you think about parsecs being a distance. Like, how can you take a route and say that your ship made it in less than 12 units of distance for that route and make that be a measurement of its speed? So here's how we're going to try and explain this. And also I should mention, in the novelization of A New Hope, Han Solo does not say parsecs.
Yeah, they retconned that real quick in the novel.
Yeah, he said standard time units. Less than 12 standard time units. I have no idea how long a standard time unit is, but that doesn't really matter, I guess. But anyway, so Kessel Run, you've got this route. It's usually, if you are taking the quote-unquote safe approach, 18 parsecs long.
Which is about 59 light years.
Yeah, so the reason why it's that long is because the route takes you through an area of space that has black holes in it. It's called the Maw. And the Maw, M-A-W, would destroy a ship if you got too close to it. It's, you know, it's a black hole.
Black holes, they're bad times for ships. Yeah.
Right. You know, and you know, have you heard what the term is for something that gets pulled through a black hole? The term of what is happening to it?
Spaghettification.
It's my favorite thing in the world. Yes, because it gets pulled into these long, thin strands as it's being...
infinitely thin strands, hypothetically.
Yeah, being pulled toward this center of intense density, or intensity, as I like to call it. Anyway, so usually this route would be 18 parsecs long, but if one were to be a little daring, or perhaps insane.
Completely crazy.
One might be able to plot a route that goes closer to the black holes.
You kind of skirt around it, and, you know, Han Solo, being the guy that he is.
He says, you know, time is money, or distance is money, or money is money, or something, I don't know. Anyway, he wanted to be able to take a more direct route, which would shave off about 6 or so parsecs from this 18 parsec long route. And that means that, you know, he's essentially, instead of going like a curved line, he's making a straight line. Not quite like that dramatic, but close to it. So, in other words, he's taking a route and making it more efficient, but it is much more dangerous. There's no direct relationship between the Millennium Falcon's speed and this route. Immediately.
Right.
But one could argue, and one has, in fact, Kyle Hill of Wired wrote a great article, How the Star Wars Kessel Run Turns Han Solo into a Time Traveler. Fantastic article.
It's really, we'll link it. It's great.
Yeah, it's entertaining, and also it starts to build in some chronological problems in the Star Wars universe, but we'll get into those. But anyway, he points out that that you could end up thinking, oh, well, the Millennium Falcon has to be a fast ship because it has to be able to escape that pull of the black holes.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, that's what tells you that it's fast. It's not only that not only is the pilot capable of making a more efficient route to go through the Kessel Run, but mm-hmm. is also in a ship fast enough to escape black holes.
Right, right, yeah. Well, according to Wikipedia, which is
one of the best wikis ever.
I just said that on the air. It was wonderful. In the commentary for Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope DVD, George Lucas said that the Millennium Falcon's navigational computers were highly advanced, and that was why the parsec thing works out the way that it does.
Yeah. So essentially then you just make Han Solo a guy who flips switches.
A really good flip switcher.
There's also a great thing that was at the Smithsonian or the Star Wars exhibit where Harrison Ford was actually talking about the first time they shot scene in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, and George Lucas gave him the direction of, you're flying the ship, and he says, okay, how do I do that? Because there are just all these dials and switches, and there was no rhyme or reason to it. And George Lucas was like, I don't know.
Push those buttons, pull that lever.
Yeah, exactly. Push the button, Frank. So anyway, you might wonder, well, why? What's the big deal of the Kessel Run anyway? What was the significance? Like, it's a smuggling route, but it's a smuggling route for what? And within the lore, mm-hmm. again,
not from the films,
expanded universe, so not canon. Kessel was a planet that had these mines on it for something called glitterstem spice, which was a substance created by spice spiders. And it's a photoactive substance, so it activates when light hits it. So it had to be mined in complete darkness. It could not be exposed to light in any way, or else it would lose its potency. And the spice was essentially a drug.
As cheery as that is, I do want to point out that I'm pretty sure the word Kessel comes from during World War II. You know, the Germans got themselves really good and surrounded by a group of Russians, and some of their compatriots were trying to get supplies and aid to their surrounded
colleagues.
Yeah, sure. And this failed completely. But the word Kessel means like pocket in German.
Yeah,
and so
or kettle.
Yeah.
Das ist richtig. So the glitterstem spice stuff, what it was supposed to do within the realm of Star Wars is boost your mental capacity and even give you perhaps telepathic powers for a short amount of time. It was also incredibly addictive. This makes Han Solo an even darker character in a way.
Because he's a drug smuggler.
Yeah, he runs drugs. That's kind of grim. During the Galactic Republic, which is the period that precedes A New Hope, that's back when there was the old Republic was around, it was being used medically, but then the Republic fails, and then the black market takes over. Smugglers start selling this, I guess, more like recreational drugs as opposed to medical things, and the Empire outlaws it, and so that's why it's important to be able to avoid Imperial entanglements, as Obi-Wan says in A New Hope. So that's why it's important there's the explanation of shaving off some of the distance that it would normally take you to travel in order to get there, and also the fact that the Falcon would have to be a little faster than most ships. Now, all of that is kind of cool. I can kind of handle most of that, even though I think that the Parsec thing is really an apologist. It's a retcon or a retroactive continuity where you, after you've made a mistake, you go back and try to justify the fact that the mistake is there.
Right, right.
This is, by the way, in no way
limited to Star Wars. No. Extraordinarily common. Yes, everywhere.
Yeah, it's, yeah. So the other thing that Han Solo says is it can go at 0.5 beyond light speed. So I interpret that to mean half again faster than the speed of light.
I interpret it as 0.5% of light speed above light speed, but yours sounds much more impressive.
Mine would be much more impressive. Either way, you're violating the laws of physics as we understand them, because as we understand, the speed of light through a vacuum is the universal speed limit. Nothing can go faster than light through
a
vacuum.
It's physically impossible.
Now, we should also mention light itself does not necessarily travel at the same speed through all media.
Oh, right, right.
You know, through a vacuum, it travels at an incredible clip. It's about 299,792,458 meters per second, or around 186,282 miles per second. That's through the vacuum of space. And Solo's ship, if you assume it could go half again faster than the speed of light, would have its top speed at somewhere around 449,688,687 meters per second, or 279,424 miles per second. That's really fast. And of course, it is faster than anything we know of, besides some theoretical particles that we'll talk about in a little bit.
Right.
That's faster than anything we know of can go. That makes it really problematic, because if we just talk about parsecs and shaving off distance, you know, okay, I can see that. We still have the problem of a parsec is a really long distance.
Oh, right, yeah.
So how, you know, if Han Solo made the Kessel Run, how long would it take him to do it, assuming that he's traveling at around the speed of light?
And, yeah. I mean, if you nudge right up to the speed of light, they would take about 39 years to travel 12 parsecs.
That would be due to an independent observer, though.
Correct.
Because special relativity, but we'll talk about that.
I don't want
to get into that right now. But special relativity will play a part in our second part of our conversation, because also we should go ahead and say it. According to Star Wars, and again, this is a retcon type thing, all ships have a stasis field stabilizer thing that keeps time.
It's a universal constant of time amongst the Empire, which is really convenient, because otherwise Han Solo would be older than Yoda.
Right.
After he had taken,
two or three trips, four or five.
Yeah, 23.
Oh, 23 trips on the Kessel Run. But it does sound like he's done it multiple times, which means that if he's done the Kessel Run multiple times, that special relativity problem, which again we'll talk about in a minute.
Just two would put him older than Palpatine. So.
Right. So here's the thing. The stasis is supposed to keep everything constant. Time is a tricky thing, because it doesn't matter. It's not just if you're traveling near or at or above the speed of light where you have to take it into account. Every single planet that's in the entire galaxy of Star Wars has time pass at a different rate
according to physics.
Yeah. And again, it's relative. So if Lauren's on one planet and I'm on another planet, each of us are going to feel as if time is passing at the same speed individually.
Mm-hmm.
Like a second will feel like a second to me. A second will feel like a second to Lauren. However, depending upon the planet's mass and the speed at which it travels through space, the actual passage of time is going to be different relative to each other. So if we match our watches up, we'll see that they're not keeping exact synchronized time. And again, more on that in just a bit. I have to preface it, because it makes my head swim. All right. So the other element in this Star Wars universe is this idea of hyperspace and a hyperdrive. And so this is when, if you've watched the Star Wars movies, you know they engage the hyperdrive, and then suddenly all the stars start streaking toward them in this beautiful display. And from the outside, it looks like the ship just suddenly gets an enormous speed boost.
Right.
And yet no one is slammed back against the back of the Millennium Falcon, like, and ejected into space because of the massive acceleration.
That would be a pretty lame trip.
It'd be really be funny to see, like, the activation of the first hyperdrive, and then you just see a bunch of aliens just floating free in space, like, well, that was a bad idea.
This kind of happens in Farscape. That's for you kids out there. We need to make Jonathan watch that anyway.
Yeah, I've never watched it. So it's not very well defined hyperspace in the Star Wars universe, even in the expanded universe.
Right. It's hyperspace is kind of placed in contrast to real space.
Yeah.
Real space being, of course, what we're kind of moving around in, and the ships under normal speed constraints are moving around it. And then apparently these hypermatter reactor drives with hypermatter implosion cores. I mean, it sounds a little bit like a wormhole or a tesseract, something like
that. Again, it's not very well explained. So it could be a parallel universe where you open up a gate and you travel into a new universe, and then you open up a second gate and you reemerge into quote unquote our universe, the Star Wars universe.
Real space.
But you are, in a different point of real space than you were when you started. Or it could be an extra dimension in space, which is kind of like warp drive, where you're warping space around you. It could be an alternate mode of physical existence, which I said is kind of like an astral plane for those of you who play fantasy games where you can travel to that. Or it could just be traveling faster than the speed of light. And all of that is difficult to get your head around. Again, none of that was definitively set down in the movies as this is how hyperdrive works or hyperspace. So we have a lot of different things to choose from. And it seems to me that a lot of the people who write in the Star Wars universe or who have tried to explain the Star Wars universe have kind of fudged around with this a lot. No one has really come out with what is the definitive answer as to what this is.
Right, sure. And I use this example about once a week with Jonathan, but it always reminds me of this one terrific interview that Rick Berman did about Star Trek, the specifically the Eisenberg uncertainty compensators and the transporters. And someone was like, well, how do those work? And he was like, very well, thank you, next question.
Yeah, whereas, the holodeck works very poorly, or at least it breaks down once a year. But again, within the lore of Star Wars, hyperspace itself is first discovered by a race called the Rakata, and they created...
The Rakata, like the cheese?
No, it's Rakata.
Okay, just checking.
You gotta remember that Star Wars, often the pronunciations are exactly the same as very silly stuff here on Earth. Funny about that. But anyway, they created force-powered drives. So they were tapping into the power of the Force to travel through space at incredible speeds. And that there, I have no problem. Because
sure,
the Force is magic. And magic means you do not have to explain how something works technologically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, physics is right out the window.
Right.
So,
yeah. It's a fairy tale. You don't question the physics of a fairy tale. If you sit there and say, well, wouldn't a prince climbing Rapunzel's hair scalp her and leave her screaming in pain, that doesn't make the fairy tale very much fun.
No.
It would have been a very short movie. Tangled would have been very grim and not in a fairy tale kind of... Okay, anyway, I'm getting off track. But they used the Force, and I thought, oh, well, if it's something that's Force-based, then that's no problem.
Whatever, sure, great.
Except that then within, again, the expanded lore, the Corellians, Corellia is one of the planets in the Star Wars universe, and the Duros, both found these starship drives and using reverse engineering determined how they worked and created technological versions of these force-driven drives. So they used technology to replicate what the Force did.
Had been doing, sure.
And now we have a technological explanation for how hyperspace works, except there's no actual explanation there. It's just that it is technological. Now, this is what drives me crazy. Because now I'm like, okay, wait, no. So if there is a technical way to make it happen, how does it work? Really, we have more about the process than anything else. So in the movies, when they were going to make a jump to hyperspace, they would activate the ship's navigational computer, which would calculate whatever the route needed to be. And this was important because, as Han Solo explains to Luke, who is an impatient little brat in A New Hope, he explains, like, you can't hurry this stuff because if you do, you pass too close to a star or a planet, it pulls you out of hyperspace and you could die.
Yeah, yeah.
Now this, to me, creates another problem, because if hyperspace is, in fact, a parallel universe, why do things that exist in our meat space affect you when you're in the parallel universe, unless, of course, they also have a presence in that parallel universe?
I don't know. It sounds much more like a wormhole, like you're somehow jumping from point to point along kind of a like a conveyor belt sort of thing, which is another concept that we can talk about in a minute.
But. So you're thinking more along the lines of this parallel universe has certain anchor points to real space that it does pass through, even if it's not a one-to-one ratio. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Or kind of like, I don't know, like there's just certain sections of space that you can go much faster through, and unfortunately, you know, sometimes a sun gets in the way.
So you're talking about like the Autobahn of outer space.
And that's another thing that I was reading on Wikipedia.
Wow.
was saying that there are maybe about 8 of these, according to the Star Wars universe, kicking around. And that are super safe routes, and then there's some that are pretty shady and wind up getting you stuck in an asteroid.
Wow. Okay. Well, at any rate, it does make me sit there and think this parallel universe explanation is harder to get my mind wrapped around if things in real space can affect your traveling through the parallel universe. Unless, of course, it's just talking about how where your output is going to be, like where your stopping point is going to be. That obviously would be important. If it maybe it has to calculate, all right, well, during the process, like right now, if we were to instantaneously jump to this endpoint right now, we'd be fine. But by the time we actually get there, there's going to be a planet in the way because of the rotation of the planets. Then I'm like, okay, all right, I got it now. That makes sense. It was the stuff that was on the pathway that made no sense. But anyway, the hyperdrive would create ripples in the time-space matrix using a fusion reaction and gamma radiation. And then the ripples would propel the ship into hyperspace, and none of that makes any sense.
But it sounds really impressive if you're just not thinking at all. If Han Solo were reading that, I would be like, yeah, Han,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah, well, I mean, come on, he was kind of dreamy, you know?
It's true.
We just bought anything he said. And this also reminds me of warp drive as well, where you're warping the time space. In this case, it's the time space matrix, and in Star Trek, it would be the space time continuum. But either way, it's the idea of warping the dimensions themselves in order to propel you across vast distances at incredible speeds. And so that's kind of the breakdown of how it worked within the lore of Star Wars.
All right, guys, I'm going to interrupt this classic episode for just a moment so that we can take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, so let's get back to hyperspace. So we mentioned in the first half, nothing can go faster than the speed of light. It's universal speed limit.
Correct, yeah. It's smart people such as Einstein have talked a lot about that.
Right, and that speed and time themselves actually have a relationship. And so this gets us into special relativity. There are a lot of different aspects of special relativity, but the one that interests me the most in this discussion is the fact that as objects move faster, time dilates on that object relative to a stationary observer. So again, in other words, like if I'm standing perfectly still in space, so I'm not on okay. a planet, I'm not moving at all.
Hopefully in a spacesuit. Yeah, sure.
Sure. Why not?
I'll give it to you this time.
All right. And Lauren, you are in a zippy little ship that's going at near the speed of light. Again, to you, time seems to be passing at the normal rate. Mm-hmm. Like if you were to have a watch.
If I had a watch, it would be ticking along at 1 second per tick, according to my eyeballs.
Right. And it would feel exactly like it was as long as a second should be. My watch would also, to me, appear to be moving at exactly the correct speed. Now, if I were to be able to see what's happening in your little world, it would look to me like time had slowed way down for you, mm-hmm. and that more time was passing for me than it was for you. So you could do like a quick joyride around the mm-hmm. solar system, for
sure,
example.
Sure.
And let's say we're just going to make an argument that you take an hour-long trip around the solar system.
An hour, according to me.
To your watch. So your watch, you start the timer as soon as you engage the drive, and an hour has gone by, and you
come back and pick you up.
Yeah, you come back to see me, and we're going to say that you're going at a speed so that we won't make it ridiculous. Well, you're going at a speed where a year of time has gone by for me.
Mm-hmm. Ludicrous speed.
Right.
Sorry.
So an hour of time's gone by for Lauren. A year has gone by for me, and that's the special relativity. It's that idea that, again, relative to me, less time has passed for Lauren. Relative to Lauren, more time has passed for me.
Right, and that's because speed and mass both have speed and gravity both have an effect on time.
Yeah,
as though time is a substance itself.
So now the gravity mass thing, that's really more general relativity, but that's also playing a part in all of our calculations when it comes to spacefaring. By the way, if you were to do something like carry an atomic clock. And have it synchronized with another atomic clock. So two atomic clocks are side by side on a table here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And you take one of those and you get on an
airplane.
Space
elevator?
Well, not even a space elevator. You just get on an airplane.
Uh-huh.
And as an airplane's going at top speed and it's flying as far as it possibly can and then it lands. By the time it lands, those two clocks that were in perfect sync before will no longer be in perfect sync. And the reason is that you were traveling a little faster. There's also some the element of general relativity, which means that
when you're further away from the center of the Earth, and therefore
the closer you are to a large mass object, the slower time passes for you relative to something that's further out from that massive object. Again, it's all relative.
Mm-hmm.
Because from your individual experience, it seems like time is passing at the same rate.
Unless you're, you know, waiting on an important phone call.
Right, in which case,
but, yeah.
Like, you know, that dreamy person you met at that party is supposed to call and you're just staring at the phone. Time, every second is an eternity, no matter whether you're traveling at the speed of light or not.
But anyway, yeah, we can observe this in satellites that we've launched into orbit. They have to mathematically...
Correct.
Yeah. For that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, in fact, both special and general relativity play a part in this. So, the global positioning system, GPS, the GPS device you have picks up signals that are beamed down from satellites. And these satellites, part of the signal is a timestamp. And the way your GPS figures out where you are is by saying, all right, well, it took X amount of time for this one signal to come from this satellite to hit me. It took X amount, Y amount of time from the signal from this other satellite to hit me. Mm-hmm. And it took Z amount of time for the signal from this third satellite to hit me. Based upon all of that and the position of those satellites, I know that I must be on this point on the Earth. Well, obviously, the timestamp is really important for that information to work.
Right, right. It needs to be pretty precise.
Yeah, otherwise, it's going to give you the wrong location on the Earth. The thing about the satellites is that they are traveling faster than a point relative on the surface of the Earth. So that means that time is passing, again, at a different rate relative to us here on Earth, on the surface. But they are also further out from the mass of the Earth, which means they're going faster, so that means time's passing more slowly relative to us, but they are further out, so time is passing faster than relative to us. This gets really complicated. But if you were talking about just special relativity, because the satellites are moving so fast, they have about a lag of about 7 microseconds per day on the satellite's clock. So remember, they're traveling faster than the relative point on the surface of the Earth. So that means that less time is passing on the satellite. 7 microseconds per day as a result. But because they're further out from the mass of the Earth than a clock would be here, you know, close to the surface, their clocks are actually running faster by about 45 microseconds per day because of general relativity. So if you take those two numbers, the lag of 7 microseconds and the surplus of 45 microseconds, and then you combine the two to cancel them out, you are still left with a 38 microsecond surplus per day on the satellite's clock compared to one on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that you actually have to correct for that. All right, that's one satellite that's orbiting the Earth. Now imagine that on all the spaceships traveling everywhere all the time. And that's why you get to the point where keeping track of time is impossible.
Galactic level is, yeah.
So in the case of Han Solo, again, going back to that Wired article that Kyle Hill wrote, he started pointing out that assuming that you're going at near the speed of light, he went ahead and said, okay, you can't go faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, that's right out. And going at the speed of light is also impossible because you would at that point have infinite
density
and mass. So that would be bad.
Your mass increases as you get closer to the speed of light.
But if we say 99.999 ad infinitum.
Yeah. So it's going about as fast as it about as close to the speed of light as you possibly can imagine. This is probably not
mathematically.
Yeah, it's probably not ever going to be possible physically, but if you can imagine it, the Kessel run would take about half a day,
about 16 hours.
Yeah, so 16 hours on the Millennium Falcon, but then galactic time, assuming that galactic time is passing at a standstill
normal rate,
40 years. So 40 years would pass in galactic time while on board the Falcon 16 hours passes. So they started to figure out like how much time has passed in the galaxy since Han Solo made his Kessel run. And then he started saying, well, yeah, it's probably made a Kessel run more than once. So if you start adding up the number of Kessel runs, how much time has passed? And that's why I said, like, you do two Kessel runs, and then he had to have been born before characters who, like,
Palpatine
Kenobi.
And Qui-Gon, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got Han Solo predating all the characters who were in the prequels. And it's because of this special relativity problem. So, by the way, if he were, in fact, able to travel faster than the speed of light, it would mean that he would arrive at his destination before he left.
Math is fun.
Yeah. So he would be on Kessel before he had decided to make the Kessel run due to the way this works. Now, granted, nothing can go faster than the speed of light, but
they have those drives,
the hyper drives,
retcon drives.
Oh, right, the retcon drives. Yes, those work really well. Where you just say, "Hey,
it's impossible. Let's change it.
Let's look at the Wookiee." Yeah, and so the stasis field was sort of the answer to that, saying that the time does not pass differently aboard the ship as it does in the outside galaxy, which is fine, except for the fact that, again, remember, every single planet has its own passage of time. Like, a second feels like a second no matter where you are, but it lasts shorter or longer depending upon the planet's mass and its speed that it moves through space.
Right. Also, technically, I think that it would be a little bit confusing to try to, you know, call days out on a whole system of planets that have different suns and different orbits. And
yeah, and Tatooine, you've got two suns. One of them might always be up. You never know. I mean, it's, yeah, it gets complex. And, yeah, and then you have all these other people who are traveling around at near or faster than the speed of light, so time gets messed up for them, too. So time would be meaningless in this universe, which, you know, one could argue it's kind of meaningless now. But I don't get that cynical except on Fridays, and it's a Thursday, so I'm all right. Then again, there are also some criticisms to things like the visual representation of what it looks like to go into hyperspace, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. There was a study that was done by, who did that study? I don't have it in front of me.
Some students, Riley Connors, Kitty Dexter, Joshua Argyle, and Cameron Sklar. And they said that if you were to travel at the speed of light, not only would you not see those stars become streaks.
Mm-hmm.
They would become a cone of light. So the center would be the brightest, and the further out from the cone, the darker it would get. And part of that's because of the Doppler effect, essentially.
Right, right. That's blue shift and red shift. And
yes,
when
yes.
when you're moving at near the speed of light or at the speed of light towards something, everything is going to shift towards blue.
Yeah, the waves compress because you're traveling toward the emanation of those waves. So they're being compressed further and further. In fact, they would be compressed so much as to move outside the visible spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would start getting hit by lots of X-rays, which would tell you that your spaceship needs to have some real protection built into it, or else people are not going to feel so great when they get to where they're going.
Right.
And that's an interesting point, too. Yeah, and I didn't even think about that until I read this little study, and I thought, well, that's pretty clever. Yeah, I guess so. The Doppler effect would be something you'd have to take into account. So it wouldn't look like those stars flying by the way they do in the movies. So we wanted to talk a little bit, conclude with a discussion about some actual real propulsion systems besides chemical rockets. Now, we don't have a hyperdrive, which is unfortunate. We would love to have one. Obviously, it'd be really handy.
Yeah, you guys get on that.
Yeah, but right now we don't have one. So some of the propulsion systems that have been proposed for space travel beyond, we're getting outside the whole thing about launching off the Earth. I mean, that part you still pretty much need chemical rockets, solid fuel rockets, to provide the propulsion you need to get off the planet.
Right, because the amount of power involved, what we can do with chemical right now is a lot more.
Well, it gives a lot more oomph.
A lot more oomph.
That's the astronomical term. And there's oomph aplenty in a chemical rocket.
Guys, we just popped out of hyperspace for just a moment so we can take another quick break, but we'll be right back.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now,
They have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
These other drives would be very useful once you do get up into space, where you don't have to have the considerations of escaping a planet's gravity or battling its atmosphere in order to maneuver.
Oh, right, because the thing about these chemical drives is that they are extremely wasteful in a grand universal kind of scheme.
Yeah, you have to carry a lot of fuel. They pack a lot of power, but you have to carry an awful lot of it. It's not terribly efficient. They wouldn't last very long in the grand scheme of things. If you're talking about trying to travel vast different distances, not differences, but distances, then the chemical rockets end up being really heavy, and that limits how much you can carry, which in turn limits how far you can go.
Yeah, so, without just coasting, like, for example, the Voyager satellites.
Right, right. Which, hey, just left the solar system.
Actually, they didn't.
Did they come back?
Yeah, they realized left something on Pluto. That was a little bit of a misquote in the press.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you caught up on that, because I obviously did not.
Well, it's okay. I failed to tweet about it, so.
That's
my bad.
Hey, no, it's okay. You caught it on the podcast, so now our listeners can say that Vogelbaum, she keeps Strickland on task. So one of the ones we want to talk about were ion engines.
Right.
Now, ion engines, they're using ions. So that's charged particles. Think of an atom that's either has an excess of electrons or a deficit in electrons. So either way, it's either got a negative or a positive charge. Plasma is an ionic gas. So it's a gas that has these free ions moving through it. It means that you can actually pass electric current through the gas itself.
Right.
That's what a plasma is. And plasma, of course, is the most plentiful of the states of matter in the universe, as far as we are aware. And so the ion engines use electric fields rather than chemical reactions to create propulsion. And they're not as powerful as chemical engines, so they don't give you that oomph that chemical engines do, but they are way more efficient, and they can last ages.
And they use that. They use solar energy to provide that.
Yeah, they get the solar energy to provide electricity to help create these reactions that will create the ions that propel it. So they have these big solar panels that will unfold from the spacecraft. We've already launched some spacecraft using ion engines. The Dawn spacecraft, which launched on September 27th, 2007, has ion engines and uses these solar panels to get the electricity. Its destination, it had two, actually, but the second destination, the ultimate destination, is a dwarf planet, Ceres, and it's scheduled to arrive there in February 2015. Visiting the NASA pages about this spacecraft, I saw some interesting figures. One was that it is a 6.3 billion kilometer journey. And just so that you get an idea of how far that is compared to a light year is 9.4 trillion kilometers. So 6.3 billion kilometers, still nowhere near a light year. So assuming that it arrives on the 1st of February in 2015, which, you know, I just took that as an arbitrary date.
You just made that up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It will have flown for 7 years, 5 months, and 2 days to go those 6.3 billion kilometers. So I did some silly little math, which was that 6.3 billion kilometers ends up being 6.3 trillion meters. And then you have to figure out how many seconds are in 7 years, 5 months, and 2 days. So I did. 236,872,800 seconds. So if you do the math, then that means that the average speed, and this is, you know, just average because it does change, is 26,597 meters per second, based on the information that I was able to find. So
so not shabby,
Not shabby, but still nowhere near the speeds of the Falcon. But it also used about uses the Dawn's engine used 450 kilograms of xenon fuel.
Mm-hmm. Xenon being a neutrally charged.
Yeah, and it used that the solar array to ionize everything. Mm-hmm. And the solar array at one astronomical unit provided about 10.3 kilowatts of power. An astronomical unit, by the way, is 149,597,871 kilometers. And you might say, well, what the heck kind of measurement is that? Well, that's the mean distance between the Earth and the Sun, because the distance actually changes throughout the Earth's rotation around the Sun. It's not always exactly that far away. That's the mean. So that's what we decided to define as an astronomical unit, and I'm sure any aliens will be happy to take us up on a discussion of why that's very human-centric.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, an astronomical unit is exactly the distance between your star and your planet. Really enlightened guys.
Well, I mean, I think that they'll really take on to it, like parsecs.
Yeah, they'll be right up there. They're like, I was having this discussion with my buddy 8 parsecs ago. Like, oh, come on.
Oh, no.
Like, hey, I know how this goes because I watched your Star Wars documentary. So at the maximum thrust, Dawn's ion engine expends about 0.25 kilograms of xenon per day. And that produces a thrust of 92 millinewtons. Which NASA explains is about the amount of force you feel when you put a piece of paper on your open hand. That's the amount of force.
Which sounds so incredibly unimpressive when you put it that way.
But in the environment of space, plenty enough. Mm-hmm. And so it says that the thrust changes the spacecraft's velocity about 10 to the negative 5 meters per second every second. And after about 1,000 days, it would achieve a velocity of 1,000 meters per second. So,
because there's no drag in space.
So. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, there's about 1,000 meters a second after 1,000 days. So that speed I gave you, the 26,597 meters per second, obviously, again, that's just averaging it out over the full distance.
Sure.
In fact, it's just constantly accelerating, not always at that particular speed, but it will be, or at that particular rate. I shouldn't say it's accelerating at that speed. That's not misleading.
Mm-hmm.
But at that rate. So, yeah, that's one of the ones that we're looking at now. There's also other forms of propulsion that have been proposed, like solar sails. Again, not something that's going to get you from Earth's solar system to a distant solar system anytime quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a very efficient means of travel by harnessing photons. The photons hit the solar sail, and that's what provides the propulsion to move the craft forward, which sounds kind of incredible. You think about that, you know, how much kinetic energy can a photon have? And it may surprise some of you to know that photons have kinetic energy, but it's true. I mean, the Earth actually, like, when the sun is hitting you, you weigh a little more because the light is actually hitting against you.
Because they're pushing on you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I never go outside. I don't like getting pushed around by the sun or by nobody. And so, then I wanted to mention there's a theoretical engine.
There's a few theoretical engines.
Yeah. The one that I came across was an electromagnetic gravity drive by Joachim Hauser. That's just a guess because I don't know how to pronounce that name.
I do not either. That sounds great to me.
Well, he's a physicist and a professor of computer science at the University of Applied Sciences in Salzgitter. And then he worked with Walter Drescher, who was an Austrian patent officer, and they came up with an idea that would use an electromagnet, essentially a rotating ring above a superconducting coil, and then they would pump a lot of electricity through the coil, which would then create a magnetic field, because we know about the relationship between coils, electricity, and then magnets.
Sure.
You know, you can either, if you run electricity through a coil, you'll create a magnetic field. If you run a coil through a magnetic field that's alternating or that's changing over time, a dynamic magnetic field, you will induce current to flow through the coil. That's this relationship between electricity and magnets, thus the electromagnetism. That magnetic field will quote, reduce the gravitational pull on the ring to the point where it floats free, end quote. And that theoretically you could go from Earth to Mars in about 3 hours using this in a way that makes no sense to me. I mean, it's talking about the math requires that you actually have extra dimensions to make it all make sense. And, you know, in the standard model, we essentially think of four dimensions, three in space and one in time. But this would require two more dimensions. It would also end up in requiring extra fundamental forces besides the strong and weak nuclear force, mm-hmm. electromagnetic and gravity that we are familiar with. There would be two more. Mm-hmm. And it's possible that these things exist, but it's so far it exists as far as math goes and not observation.
Right. Even lower down on the scale, there's a few other things that people have kind of theorized about. One is called, this is probably not how you say it, Alcubierre's warp drive is a thing that NASA has talked about a little bit, which kind of is similar to the Doppler effect. It says that if you can get space-time to expand behind you and contract in front of you, you can just kind of warp straight through it.
So in other words, think of it this way. You've got imagine you have a map in front of you. Mm-hmm. All right, a paper map, and you have put a figurine on the leftmost edge of the paper map, and your job is to get the figurine to the rightmost edge in the least number of die rolls, and there are spaces there mm-hmm. that represent how far you can go. So normally there would be 100 spaces between you and the right side, and you're only able to roll the die X number of times.
Right, but if you can just pick up the edge of the map.
Right, if you were able to fold the edge of the map so that it's right next to you, and you roll a 1 and you move one space, and then you unfold the map, you have just moved one space, but you've traveled all that distance.
Right.
That's the magic of warp drive, people. We're talking yes. about folding all of the galaxy around us to accommodate our travel needs.
Right.
And people say, I'm a demanding traveler.
But so that's one, you know, it sounds super easy on paper.
Yes, I just explained that.
and the other being creating wormholes, a wormhole being kind of a pokey thing.
Yeah,
through
it's
two
kind of
points
a shortcut
on a paper map.
Yeah.
If instead of a little figurine, you had a pointy figurine or a pencil or something and you stuck that pencil straight through the two points in the map that you wanted to travel between
right.
and then sort of hopped through the holes.
Yeah, so there's still some travel time, but it's much more reduced. This is where we get wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Right. But hypothetically, all we would have to do is build two super dense rings, giant super dense rings, charge them somehow, and spin them near the speed of light.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah, no problem.
So the interesting thing here, by the way, is that when we're talking about warping space, when we're talking about actually moving or manipulating the space-time continuum or however you want to say it, the fabric of space mm-hmm. itself, we actually get around the special relativity problem.
Right.
Because your actual speed doesn't need to be light speed. You are just changing the distance.
Yeah.
You're not going at this incredible speed. So time's still going to travel, or time is still going to pass differently relative to someone on a different ship or a different planet, but not at the amazing differences.
Right. You wouldn't need an infinite amount of energy to move yourself, and you wouldn't have an infinite amount of mass.
So. Yeah, and you also wouldn't find out when you call back home that everyone you know is 40 years older.
Right.
They might be, you know, a few microseconds older than you, but it would be, you know, so small as to be negligible, except for, you know, things like communication and stuff where you have to have exact timing. Obviously, you'd have to have computers to correct those calculations. But when it comes to, you know, missing someone's birthday, you don't have to worry so much. Daylight saving time would probably be interesting. So anyway, yeah, I mean, there are people who are working on these theoretical drives, and it may turn out that the theories are just, they're not truly like theories in the sense of this is really established stuff.
Right, they're not mathematical theories.
They're more like hypotheses that
correct.
We have yet to prove. So it'll be interesting to see if we ever do develop anything beyond the propulsion systems that we're currently looking into. I mean, it would obviously be very helpful for anything involving colonization or exploration, because otherwise it's going to take us a really long time to get from here.
Several generations.
Yeah.
You
would have to build spacecraft capable of supporting multiple generations of people aboard that with a very limited number of supplies, because, you know, you pretty much, you have what you take with you. You know, we don't know of any shopping malls out there beyond Earth.
You have to grow it yourself.
Yep. So anyway, that kind of wraps up this discussion about Star Wars and hyperspace, the Kessel Run, what we're actually looking into as means of propulsion in space. It's a really interesting topic. I'm glad that we grabbed this one as our 501st episode. And hey, to all my Star Wars fans out there, I just have to say, live long and prosper.
I hope you guys enjoyed this classic episode of Tech Stuff about hyperspace. I think that's a pretty awesome science fiction topic that I find particularly fascinating. Don't know if we're ever going to see any meaningful manifestation of that idea, or maybe we just ultimately find out that there's no real way to achieve that particular flight of fancy. I hope otherwise, but we'll see. If you guys have any suggestions for future Tech Stuff topics, let me know. Contact me on Facebook or Twitter. The handle for both is TechStuffHSW, and I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.